Let's read again from Psalm 139. And we started to look at this psalm for four Sunday nights. Our first time was 2 weeks ago, and we'll look at it again tonight. And we'll just read again the first half of the psalm, verses 1 to 12. Psalm 139. It's a psalm of David. He says, O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know my sitting down and my rising up. You understand my thought afar off. You comprehend my path and my lying down, and are acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You have hedged me behind and before, and laid your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain it. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend into heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall fall on me, even the night shall be light about me. Indeed, the darkness shall not hide from you, but the night shines as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to you. Amen. May the Lord bless this searching psalm to our hearts and minds. Again, it's one of these portions of Scripture that we can learn about the being of God. And 2 weeks ago, we saw God's omniscience in Psalm 139, verses 1 to 6. But tonight, we are looking at God's omnipresence in Psalm 139, verses 7 to 12. And we saw that God knows us intimately, and he sees every one of us. He knows us to a man. O Lord, you have searched me and known me. He doesn't say you have searched us and known us. He doesn't speak generally. He speaks personally. You've searched me. You've known me. God knows us to a man. God knows our movements. He talks about when I sit down, when I rise up, things that you and me don't take note of each day. But God does. God sees these things. My path, my lying down, he is acquainted with all my ways. God knows our minds. You discern my thoughts from afar. God knows our mouths. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. So these things are very personal and very intimate. We cannot hide anything from God. He knows all things. Omniscience, that's what the word omniscience means. He knows all. But verses 7 to 12, we're going to see God's omnipresence, that God is everywhere. And we'll see an outline that's going to come up here. There's not a place where God does not abide. There's not a place where God does not guide. And there's not a place where man can hide. That's what we see in verses 7 to 12. So first of all, there's not a place where God does not abide. David throws out the question, where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? He doesn't use the word go again. Where shall I go from your spirit? He uses the word, or where shall I flee? There's a sense of urgency about that. There's maybe a sense of guilt almost about that. Maybe conscience is stricken. Or where shall I flee from your presence? And then he speaks of three directions. If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, or hell, as some translations put it, you're there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, there's not a place where God does not abide. Go anywhere in this world, even the remotest regions, God will be there. Go out into the universe, anywhere you want to go. No matter how many light years you are away from this earth, God will be there. You will know and you will feel the presence of God. In 1 Kings chapter 8, Solomon prayed at the opening of the temple, "Heaven and the heaven of heavens cannot contain you." Will God indeed dwell on the earth? Heaven and the very heaven of heavens cannot contain you. It's as if when God made the universe, it is massive to us, but it is still small to God. It's not enough to contain him. Too small for the presence of God. And one has said, God is wherever I am. I fill but a small part of space. He fills all space. He is wherever I shall be. He does not move with me, but I move in him. In Acts chapter 17, you'll read of Paul in the city of Athens. He arrives in Athens. He's looking about. He comes to the Areopagus or Mars Hill, and it's where wise men meet and where they debate the latest issues and the latest philosophies and so on. And Paul arrives here and he's looking round him and he comes to the conclusion that this is a very religious place, a very superstitious place. And he finds an altar. He says in Acts 17:23, "I found also an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God." It's almost like in the First World War, there's a monument to the unknown soldier. Because there are many soldiers that died and were never found again. Their names have been lost to history. And this one monument was put up. Other soldiers were found and identified, and their graves have their names upon them. But many were not found, and to the unknown soldier. And that covers all those soldiers that were never identified. And it seems in Athens that they had images of different gods and different religions, but just in case they left anybody out, they had this monument to the unknown God. So whoever your God was, it was covered by this monument to the unknown God. And Paul used that as an opportunity to bring to them the true God, one who can be known, not to the unknown God. And Paul goes on to say, yet he is actually not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. So to saved and unsaved, there's people who has no thought of God out in those streets tonight. No thought of him whatsoever. Will not give God any acknowledgement for anything. Never thank God for their food. Never say grace. Never thank Him for the clothes on their back. Never thank Him for anything. They've no thought or time for God. And yet Paul was saying these words to godless individuals in Athens, that He is not far from each one of us, for in Him we live and move and have our being. The reason why you have food on your table is because of God. The reason why you have reasonably good health, maybe better health than other people, is because of God. You're not acknowledging Him in your life, but yet He is good to you. His tender mercies are over all His works. And no matter where we would go on this planet, no matter where we would go in this universe, and man has been into space, where shall I go from Your Spirit, or where shall I flee from Your presence? I can't go anywhere. Why would anyone want to escape God's presence? Maybe because it is of sin. Maybe running away from God. Because remember, when Adam and Eve sinned, what was the first thing that they did? They sought to get away from God's presence. And they hid themselves. And they didn't go looking for God. God came looking for them. Verse 5 here says, "You hem me in behind and before, and lay Your hand upon me." You hem me in behind and before, protected by God. Three places David mentions. He takes us, it seems, to the highest height. "If I ascend to heaven, You are there." That's as high as man can go. We can't go any higher than that. If I ascend to heaven, or if I ascend into the heavens. The book of Amos, chapter 9, verses 2 and 3, says, "If they dig into Sheol, from there shall My hand take them. If they climb up to heaven, from there I will bring them down. If they hide themselves on the top of Carmel, even there I will search them out and take them. And if they hide from My sight at the bottom of the sea, there I will command the serpent, and it shall bite them." So digging into Sheol, climbing up to heaven, hiding themselves on the top of a mountain, going to the bottom of the sea, God says, "No matter where you go, I'll find you. I'm there. I'm there before you reach those places. I'm there waiting on you. Where shall I flee from Your presence? Nowhere. If I ascend to heaven, You are there." Obadiah, verse 4, says about the Edomites, "Though you soar aloft like the eagle, though your nest is set among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord." Now that is extravagant language, used for a fact. "Though your nest is set among the stars," and of course nowadays we know how far away stars are, and man in a normal lifetime would never reach some of the stars, even though he's traveling in a spaceship thousands of miles an hour. But it just proves the point that even if man was able to do that, God says, "I will bring you down. I will be there to bring you down," declares the Lord. So He takes us to the highest height, as high as man can go. He takes us to the deepest depth, as low as man can go. "If I make My bed in Sheol, You're there." Now, different translations will use the word hell, but the word hell throughout the Bible is used in different ways. If I make my bed in Sheol, escaping from God in the opposite direction. Sheol is defined as the place of departed spirits. Death or the grave, the place or state to which all men go at death. And in other places, it is used as a place of punishment for the wicked. Sheol. If I make my bed in Sheol, you're there. It equally says that God is there as well as being in the highest heaven. If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you're there. God is there. Yes, of course we expect God to be in heaven. For Christians to enjoy the pleasures of God, the presence of God, the peace of God forever and ever. But God in hell. And is that not what hell will be? Because God is there. God in all his fury. God in all his wrath. The unsaved can walk about this earth. They can know a better life than what some Christians can know. They live in comfort. They have nice homes, nice possessions, a nice bank balance. They have great health. But once they enter hell, it'll be totally different. They're enjoying the tender mercies of God at the present time. But if they die without Christ and they go to hell forever and ever and ever, there's no tender mercies that they know. There's nothing that they know, only God's undiluted wrath. For our God is a consuming fire. The fire of hell. Some might say it's literal, others will say it's figurative. It's figurative because God is the fire of hell. The presence of God in his wrath. That Christ's rejectors will experience forever and ever and ever. If I make my bed, Matthew Henry, the old commentator, says hell is a most uncomfortable place to make one's bed. But the psalmist is just drawing a contrast. If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed, I'm in Sheol. Of course, you can't ascend to heaven on your own steam. Of course, that is just absolutely impossible to do that. And it's the same thing. If I make my bed in Sheol, there are no beds in hell. A bed is a figure of rest, of comfort. There's no rest. There's no comfort. This idea that some people have of hell, that it's simply going to be an extension of one's life on earth, and they're going to meet up with those mates that they knew, that they drank with, and all the rest of it, and they're just going to have a jolly good old time. And they're just going to carry on the way it always was. That is not the picture at all of hell in the Bible. If I make my bed in Sheol, you're there. There are no beds. A miserable, terrible, we just can't find words to describe what it must be for one who is not saved to die in their sins and to go to hell. God is there not to offer any comfort. God is there not to offer any hope. God is there not to offer any peace, any respite whatsoever. Our God is a consuming fire. If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, one of the words used for hell, you're there. What a picture of God, the wrath of God. Now we can live this life where wrath is mixed with mercy. As the prophet Habakkuk, I'll use that expression, in wrath remember mercy. But in hell there's no mercy. There's just wrath. Just the raw wrath of God. So the psalmist in his thoughts, in talking about the presence of God, he takes us to the highest heights. He brings us to the opposite direction, to the deepest depths. He takes us to earth's extremities. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, of course, in those times they wouldn't have had the sense of geography that we have and how big the world is and just what is beyond the horizon there and so on. But if I should go even away, way over there, if I take the wings of the morning, if I would be able to fly and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea. And of course they knew that the sun rose and the sun set. The sun rose in the east and it sets in the west. He takes us as high as man can go. He takes us as low as man can go. He takes us as far as man can go. And there's not a place where God does not abide. And one has said, were we to speed on the wings of the morning breeze, the farthest east where the sun rises, and break into oceans unknown to chart and map, yet there we should find the Lord already present. There's not a place where God does not abide. And there are those, you know, who are born and brought up in Christian homes, brought to church, Sunday school, youth organizations, that different kind of thing. And once they come a certain age, they say, that's it, you can't make me go anymore. And maybe they go off to Australia or somewhere or New Zealand just to get away as far as possible from the home environment and what they were brought up in. And they live the life of the prodigal on the other side of the world. And I've known of a few cases like that. And even there, they met the Lord. Or the Lord met them on the other side of the world. They couldn't get away from God, no matter where they went on the face of the earth. They went to these countries and they found churches and evangelical churches, and they worked with Christians who witnessed to them. And they couldn't get away from Christian influence, because there's not a place where God does not abide. Secondly, we see there's not a place where God does not guide. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. The hand of God. It's a lovely thought, it's a lovely study. The hand of God. Verse 5 says, you hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. God's hand upon you. But this is the thought of God leading you. God holding your hand. Even there, even in the uttermost parts of the sea, your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. I love those verses in Isaiah 41 and verse 10. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Verse 13 says, for I, the Lord your God, hold your right hand. It is I who say to you, fear not, I am the one who helps you. Chapter 42 and verse 6, I am the Lord, I have called you in righteousness, I will take you by the hand and keep you. Isn't that a lovely picture there? Holding hands with God. Holding hands with God. We have held the hands of a parent, a mother or father. And some of our parents are not here anymore to hold hands with. But we have childhood memories of that. And we knew their comfort. Hold the wife or hold the hand of a wife or husband, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, holding hands, but holding hands with God. And this is what we have here. What a comfort that is. What assurance that is to know and to feel his hand almost. And contrasting that with idols, in Psalm 115 and verse 7, when the psalmist is contrasting God with idols, and one of the things that he says about them is, they have hands, but they do not feel. They're just hands that someone has shaped out of wood or metal. Make a little statue of an idol. Their hands don't move, their hands can't do anything. It's just an ornament. They have hands but do not feel. But we have felt the hands of God. Even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me. God's presence and God's providence at home and abroad. And thirdly, there's not a place where man can hide. And that's obvious. If there's not a place where God does not abide, then there's not a place where man can hide from God. Verses 11 and 12, if I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night. Even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day. For darkness is as light with you. There's many an action done in the dark. There's many who leave their criminal activity. There's many who leave their immorality until it's dark, using natural darkness as a cover as they move about the streets. Hopefully nobody sees them. Maybe wearing dark clothing. And then in the darkness. You know the type of thing that I'm talking about. And of course, they can be very successful. They can hide from their fellow man, hide from the authorities. But we can't hide from God. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. God sees. God sees everyone. God sees everything. And there's the thought here too I'm even further Christian who's going through a time of trial, which can be a time of darkness. You've entered a dark time. Isaiah 50 verse 10, "Who among you fears the Lord and obeys the voice of his servant? Let him who walks in darkness." Now, wouldn't you expect that to say, who among you fears the Lord and obeys the voice of a servant? Let him who walks in light. But no, it says darkness because you're going through a hard time. Let him who walks in darkness and has no light trust in the name of the Lord and rely on his God. That's Isaiah's advice. Let him who walks in darkness and has no light. Is there someone like that tonight in the congregation? Walking in darkness and has no light. And what are you advised to do? Keep on trusting in the name of the Lord and rely on his God. Because God knows the way he's taking you. You don't know. Like Job, you say, "I do not know the way that he takes. But when he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold." So God's omnipresence. There's not a place where God does not abide. He's everywhere in the universe. The universe is even too small, too compact for the presence of God. And there's not a place where he does not guide, takes your hand, leads you no matter where you go. That's good to be conscious of that and to know that. And there's not a place where man can hide from his presence. God willing, next week we'll look at God's omnipotence. And we have lovely verses onwards from verse 13.